come into your life like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap songs.
Welcome back to the Jump Force Show on the Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging in there with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program. Utilize the text line. Joining us now on the line, calling in from D.C., our good friend. He represents the 2nd Congressional District, but will likely soon represent the 1st Congressional District after the November election is all said and done. Congressman Barry Moore on the line. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, we are doing good. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thank you for coming on. Well, you and I are kind of talking off air a little bit about what's going on in D.C. Hey, Congressman Adderhold on earlier. Where are you on the CR business? What do you think? What would you like to see happen? But what do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know where I'm at. I mean, I actually last night voted for the first CR in the history of my tenure in Congress. These continuing resolutions that just continue spending as it has been, and continues a lot of the actually the spending at COVID levels in a lot of ways. But because the SAVE Act was attached to it to stop people who are not U.S. citizens from voting in our elections, President Trump and many of us felt like we had to try to attach that to this CR if we were going to move. In fact, we were going to move the SAVE Act. That's how we had to do it before the elections in November. So I was kind of in a tough spot, but I thought that the elections are the preeminent right now. We don't need people who are not citizens voting in our elections. That's the way to steal the country, steal the elections, that sort of thing. But what I think will happen, and that CR actually failed. I think we were short. There was not enough support. I think we came up 20 short to even get that over to the Senate. So it'll be interesting to see what Speaker Johnson does. And, of course, I'm sure Congressman Adderhold probably had some insights being on the probes. But I just feel like that we're going to end up with some sort of clean CR. They're going to try to, you know, the SAVE Act would not be on there. I think Johnson would try to do something short term. I don't know if he'll go for a 6 month or a 3 month to get us into December. I'm not sure exactly how that plays. Our last day here is December 19th. But, you know, I'm at a point right now that we need to get through these elections in November. But I am not willing to support another CR. I think we need meaningful legislation, a direction of change in this country. We can't keep spending like we're spending. There's so many things going on that I was willing to bite the bullet to help the speaker last night and to support the president's position on the SAVE Act. But when that comes off, I'm a no vote. And so, unfortunately, that means that the speaker's probably going to be looking at some of the Dems to get this CR across the finish line rather than doing the approach process like we should be doing and actually passing bills and budgets and that sort of thing that actually fund the government. We just continue these resolutions. And so I'll be a no vote from here forward. And I'm honestly to a point, Jeff, that if we get through November, I think we'll have the Senate, we'll have the House. I think we need to figure out a way to give President Trump a clean slate and don't let Schumer hang a bunch of baggage around his neck for the next 6 months as he's trying to lead this country through what would be an interesting inauguration period, a swearing in, a new Congress, a new Senate. We don't need to have the president's hands tied. And so I will see what his position is, but my position is that if we're going for a CR, that's not the solution. Why would we tie Trump's hands in the first 6 months of his administration?
Congressman, let's talk about this real quick. Give us your kind of take on the where we are on this election cycle. It looks pretty favorable, I think, for the Senate. The presidency, I think Trump's got a little bit of momentum right now. It's not like a big, you know, full head of steam here, but it's a trend. It's certainly in his direction. And then I would have to assume, I mean, a lot of that is what's going to matter when it comes to the House and where Republicans are and what direction, you know, they go to either expanding their majority or potentially losing it.
Yeah, I think no doubt how Trump performs will certainly help down the ballot in some of the swing areas and help us get maybe a few more members here in the House. And, you know, Jeff, I was sitting on the back row the other day on the floor, and I was talking to some of the guys from California. They got these jumble primaries, and they felt really good about the direction the country was going based on what they're seeing within their own state. And when you see the Cori Bushes of the world, who's an extreme squad member lose. Jamal Bowman, who pulled the fire alarm, he was a squad guy. He got beat. And when you see, like you said, I think the Senate, it makes sense that Sheehy's doing well against Chester. In Montana, I think that certainly West Virginia Justice is going to be there. He'll be replacing Joe Manchin. And then Ohio, Pennsylvania, those are going to be, again, that's going to be based on how well Trump does in those, what I call the swing states, those battlegrounds, you know. And down the ballot, those people benefit. That may help Caroline as well. If Trump continues to build momentum in that new second in Alabama, there's an opportunity there for us to gain that seat or hold that seat, I should say. So, you know, I feel I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think that Trump does have the momentum, as you mentioned. The internal polling that I'm seeing from the campaign, they feel good about where they're at with independents. I think they're holding the line there. They didn't lose during the DNC convention. Tim Walz didn't seem to help them that much. And I don't think debate hurt Trump. It didn't. Nobody scored a knockout punch. So I am cautiously optimistic we could very well have the trifecta this time around.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore of the 2nd Congressional District for the time being on the program. Well, the big story here in Alabama, Congressman, and I'm sure you're aware, and there's an event tonight in your hometown. You and I talked a little bit about it at Alcop, but this Haitian resettlement and a lot of concern about that. The hot spots right now, at least we're being told, Sylacauga, Albertville, and Athens. Looks like Enterprise is about to become one of those.
Yeah, we actually are. They're having a meeting tonight at Enterprise concerning this resettlement of these Haitian refugees, and it's kind of central around a lot of the poultry industry, I think, in a lot of ways. I have a couple of major plants in my hometown. You have Wayne Farms, you have Pilgrim's Pride. So I think they're getting these work visas, and then somehow the administration is using this blanket asylum to give these folks these work visas, and they're shipping them to these cities. But the problem with that is there's no resources to help it. And my people are certainly, most of us, are terribly upset with the fact that we knew this was a border crisis. We've known there was a border crisis in this country. I've been to the border 3 times, and I said, folks, this is not going to stop in Arizona. It's not going to stop in Texas. It's not going to stop in California. These people will eventually find their way in our communities, and it's just now starting to take effect. And look, I've been to Haiti, brother. I've done mission trips down there. But we need to be exporting capitalism and Christianity and free markets to the world. We don't need to be importing the third world into our communities. People who can't assimilate, who can't speak the language. If you talk to the educators in our community, they don't have any way to communicate with these kids. They're dropped off at the front of these schools. And then healthcare, I was talking to some physicians. They're treating folks in the ER that are running up bills that are staggering. You know, healthcare is expensive. And yet they don't even have their real name a lot of times. There's no way that money gets collected. So the Biden administration and these reckless border policies of just import the world, no matter who they are, where they're from, and just give them the standing as a citizen and the subsidies, that will bankrupt the country. We're already $35 trillion in debt, but I think you're going to see crime follow that. We're already starting to see that. We had some houses broken into an Enterprise. You know, we had an AR-15 stolen out of one. One poor couple had to take all the azaleas out of their yards because the people were camping in their yards. They were using the azaleas as cover. There's just a lot of things that the consequences of this wide open, feckless border policy that Biden has put in place is now starting to affect the communities that we see. And so we're certainly going to engage in the process. I'm planning on, I won't be there tonight because I got votes, but my hope is to kind of start. I'm going to, when I get down to district next month or so, we're going to start meeting with community leaders, education leaders, even our state leaders, and see if there's a way that we can sort of push back on what the administration is doing to our great state and to our local communities.
Well, and here's the question, and this is what I hear, Congressman. This parole program that the Biden administration is using is sort of the mechanism for what's going on, that while they are here and they're here doing what they're doing, it's under the grace of the Biden administration. They're giving them a work visa or whatever. They're giving them, in some cases, like EBT cards. Trump comes in, and this will all, one would assume, he will rescind all of this. But then what happens after that? Can you, you know, are people thinking, like, can we just send them back, or is there more to this? It feels to me like all of this is happening right now. in the middle of a presidential election, it just seems like they're running like a hurry-up offense, trying to settle as many of these Haitians into different communities around the country as they can.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly what they're doing. It's like the midnight bills and the executive orders they sign on the way out of office and the pardons. Biden is leaving us this parting gift of a bunch of people who don't belong in this country, who didn't come here in the proper process. And now they're going to be left to the red states and these small town mayors and law enforcement and certainly the next presidential administration to figure out how to fix a mess that they created. And believe you me, the media is going to crucify Trump when he starts rounding people up. They accuse him of using cages when Obama did. I mean, they're going to. But Jeff, we have no choice. This is going to be a trying time for our nation, and we will have to round these folks up and get them out of here. And I know I hate it, but I'm just telling you, we cannot survive the load, the burden, and the crime that's going to come with this wave of people that are not here, that don't want to assimilate, that do not understand our values as American citizens. They have not paid into this system. They are not a part of this system, and they will not assimilate to this system, and that will destroy this government and this country. And so we're in big, big trouble. There's, you know, estimates as high as 20 million people here. But you're right. Biden used the parole, which was supposed to be case-specific, to let somebody come into this country, and they blanket parole these people in here without any background checks. You know, I've had a couple of young girls raped last year in my district, just brought into this country and kind of come in. They were called gotaways, came in and raped a couple of girls. This thing is going to continue to damage our kids. It's going to raise crime in our communities. We cannot tolerate it. And as tough and as hard as it's going to be, we're going to have to round these people up and get them out of here. And if they want to come through the right way, then we can talk about that. But they're just dumping people in here without background checks. We don't know who they are, where they're from, and what they're up to. It is ridiculous. And a nation cannot survive without borders and without secure elections.
Well, something else, I mean, this is what it looks like to me. And we could go back to 2016 or 2017, I should say, and the travel ban. And Trump puts in that place, that travel ban, and all these little groups head off to federal court. They get the injunction. The ban is put on hold, and then it takes like a few years for the Supreme Court finally say, oh, actually, he can do this. And then, like, what I think is going to happen here is that Trump's going to try, assuming he wins, try to send these folks back, and all of these left-wing groups or whatever you want to call it are going to go run to federal court and say, you can't do that, you can't do that, and they'll judge shop, they'll do whatever. They'll find a friendly venue, and they'll do this, and they'll have to go to the Supreme Court again, and then by the time the Supreme Court gets around to it, I mean, he'll be a lame duck, right? I mean, does that just seem like the way things are going to have to be for now?
It does, but I think, Jeff, we as states, and certainly this is something we're talking about, is how do we pre-file those lawsuits saying what Biden's doing now is illegal? So by the time Trump's in there, maybe we'll have standing in court, and they won't have time to countersue. We should already have the suits filed, and that's something I want to talk to a lot of our state leaders and community leaders. Let's go ahead and pre-file, because this is illegal what they're doing to our communities. So that way we don't have to wait for the courts to decide on Trump's case where he's the defendant. We need to be the plaintiff in this situation. And so I think we have to move the ball faster down the court, because Trump's going to have his hands full. And listen, it's going to be a tough time for our country. We know that. And we as Americans have got to recognize that we are in for a fight. Even if we win the election, that is the beginning of what we will see. We saw him burn the city in 2017 when the man was sworn in. He had not even sat in the Oval Office, and D.C. was on fire that day. So there is going to be a fight every step of the way. And the left loves to use the courts. We have to be proactive in pre-filing this stuff so that by the time Trump's in these cases, hopefully we can get an adjudication and say, hey, they're right. These states have standing. These people should never have been here to start with. So that kind of gets the ball ahead of the countersuits, if you will, of the plaintiffs coming from the other side.
Well, let me ask you this question. This is a hard one, but, I mean, you see the way even the Republican governor in Ohio is – I mean, there's a lot of tepid Republicans, and once the – assuming, like I said, Trump wins – do you think that the Republican Party has the backbone to really back him if he goes about this? Or do you think, you know, the media are going to be relentless? Democrats, Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer are going to just double down, and they're going to use all this hyperbole. And I think that has a real impact on a lot of your colleagues do you think that – do you have confidence that they're in this to win it?
They better be. If they're not, we should fire them. I mean, look, when you're talking about a man who got 74 million votes the last cycle, I mean, good gracious, what they've done to him to try to destroy him. They've tried to kill him twice. They've impeached him twice. They've arrested him. I don't know how many times and charged him with 90-some-odd felonies. A 77-year-old man who could ride off and he's wealthy. He don't need this job. But we sure need him in that capacity. We better get behind him, Jeff, because the country, the future of this nation rests in that. It rests in winning this election, and it rests in us standing and fighting. And there's a movement out here. And when you got Bobby Kennedy, the former chair of the co-chair of the DNC, Tulsi Gabbard, saying he's the man for the job, there's a movement within this country that is moving towards Donald Trump. And if the Republicans don't see that as the Make America First movement and the blue-collar just workers of America coming to this man's support, then we are ill-informed and we're also cowards. I think we have to stand for this country no matter how much pressure we get. And that's what I was telling you earlier, man. This is not going to be an easy path forward. Just because we win don't mean we win. We have to continue to stay in the fight. And that's part of just engaging with the man that is president of the United States, which will be Donald Trump, and making sure that no matter what the media says about us, what names they call us, what the left accuses us of, there is nothing more important than our children and grandchildren's freedom and the saving of this nation. And that's what it comes down to. And if the people in Ohio got a problem, the governor can't do it, fire him and get you somebody who's got a backbone, because the time is now.
Congressman, we always appreciate your time. Let's do this again soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right. Congressman Barry Moore there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Dixieland.